Welcome to The Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology and this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of The Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews informed and entertaining guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to anyone wondering where all this is taking us. And now, your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
One of the very cool things we can do here at The Social Network Show is to bring you a half hour of consultation with national, even worldwide experts at absolutely no cost to you. Today is no exception. It doesn't matter who you are or what you do. Who wouldn't like to have greater satisfaction with life? Not just work, but life. What will accomplish this? For one thing, humor. Fun at work? Not likely, you say. Folks where I work or live are pretty buttoned up. Or maybe you think, I'm not a comedian. Every joke I tell falls flat. Well, stay tuned. You'll find that humor is different than comedy and doesn't take a special talent, skill, or a lot of time. This episode of the Spider Graham series on The Social Network Show features humor engineer Andrew Tarvin. Spider himself is a CEO of TrainingCraft.com, a company that offers online, live, and customized training services on digital marketing and advertising best practices for advertisers, agencies, media buyers, and more. Many of you have enjoyed the book he co-authored with Kevin Ryan, Taking Down Goliath, Digital Marketing Strategies for Beating Competitors with 100 Times Your Spending Power. So I'm going to introduce Spider Graham. And Spider, would you like to introduce your guest?
I absolutely would, Dr. J. Thank you so much. So I had a chance recently to have dinner with Andrew. We got a chance to meet in New York City as he was wandering through. And just really love what he's bringing to the table here. And I'm going to let him talk a little bit more about what he's been doing and his path, if you will. Because he's taken on something I think is fairly unusual in that he has identified, I think, a very strong market need that a lot of people ignored. And it's the use of humor in the workplace, but not necessarily just, you know, ho, ho, let's make everything funny, but as a more effective way of communicating. So with that said, I'm going to let Andrew do more of the talking here. But Andrew, so much for being here. Thank you. Welcome to the broadcast.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Spider. And thank you, Dr. J, for having me. I'm always happy to talk more about humor.
Our pleasure.
So the first question that pops into mind is, how do you get started being a humor engineer? What's that all about?
Yeah, so I have kind of an interesting background in that my degree is in computer science and engineering, which surprises a lot of people. They're like, and you talk about humor now? Because, you know, we're not necessarily the most stereotypically funny or even outgoing personalities. But for me, it kind of started when I first graduated from college. So ever since I can remember, I've been obsessed with efficiency, or really since before I can remember, because I was born 3 weeks early. So apparently even in the womb, I was like, I don't need a full 9 months. I'm ready to go right now. Let's do this, Mom. Right. So I've always had that mentality. I remember in school thinking that smart for me was getting a 93% in all my classes because that was the lowest grade you could get and still get an A. And it got to the point if I got like a 94.
So you're really good at math as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Good at math, calculating it. So it's like, oh, if I got a 94, 95, or 100%, I was upset because it meant that I did more work than I had to do.
Less efficient, right?
Exactly. Nice. I was like, I could have like hung out a little bit longer. I didn't have to do all of that homework. So I graduated, went to Ohio State, the Ohio State University, got a degree in computer science and engineering, and started working at Procter & Gamble after that as a project manager. And it was at P&G that I realized that there's a difference between being efficient and being effective, right? Because you can be efficient with things like computers, but you can't really be efficient with humans, with other people. And luckily for me, I had started doing improv comedy in college because my best friend wanted to start an improv comedy group and he needed people, so he forced me to join. And I realized that a lot of the same skills that you need to effectively improvise on stage are the same skills you need to effectively communicate and interact with other people. And so that kind of got me on this journey of exploring the value of humor, not necessarily just for the fun part of it, but to actually be more effective with, for me as an engineer, the hardest resource for me to interact with, which was fellow people.
Okay. So, I mean, and we talked a little bit about, you know, people would assume automatically that as a stand-up comic and as someone who would classify themselves as a humor engineer, I should say, that you are probably very much an extrovert as well. Is
right.
that the case?
It's not. I am very much an introvert. If you know Myers-Briggs, I'm INTJ. If you know Star Wars, I'm R2-D2. Translation, I think. But yeah, so it's just something that I learned to be effective in. And what I've realized over time is, you know, that we're not our personality assessments, you know, any more than we are what we had for dinner last night. That's just a single assessment at a single point of time. And if you do things that a humorist would do, so you incorporate fun things into the work that you do, or you do stand-up comedy like I started doing, you are effectively a humorist because that's what your actions speak to. And so, yeah, it's a learned skill that you can learn over time.
So, I mean, so if I were someone, you know, and I guess tell me a little bit more about your mm-hmm. business model, I guess. But I'm a company that wants to be more effective. I want to have better communication, not only between the folks who work for the company, but between, let's say, my sales staff and clients. How can you help me? How can you come in? And what kind of tools or approaches would you take to help change things around so we tweak our perspective on how we communicate using humor?
Yeah, so part of it is probably one of the biggest barriers that groups have is just understanding the value of humor. When I, you know, I talk with organizations all around the world, and very rarely do I find people that think of humor as a bad thing, right? There's not very many people that are anti-humor. Most of the people think that it's a nice to have. But humor in reality is really a must-have, because if you consider that 83% of Americans are stressed out at work, 55% are unsatisfied with their jobs, and 47% struggle to stay happy, you start to realize that, you know, the current way of working isn't really working, right? It's a holdover from the industrial age where everything was about this obsession with efficiency. And now that we're in a knowledge economy, the way that we work, the way that we manage our time, and more importantly, the way that we manage our energy becomes very, very important. And so I start with kind of teaching people about the value of humor, why it's so important, and then give them programs and steps so that they can actually learn to use humor themselves. I think that one of the things that comes up with a lot of people is they're like, oh, I could never do that, right? I could never be a comedian or anything like that. I did an event in Switzerland a couple of months ago, and another speaker on the lineup was a gentleman named Kevin Richardson, who, if you don't know, is also the lion whisperer. So if you've ever seen like that YouTube video of that giant lion hugging the guy, that's
right.
Kevin Richardson. And I was talking with him, and he found out that it did stand up and improv comedy. He's like, I could never do that. It's too scary. I'm like, you live with lions, right? So people have this perception about their ability to do it, but in actuality, humor, using humor in the workplace isn't about becoming a stand-up comedian. It's not about telling jokes. It's about finding ways to have more fun in the work that you do to make it more engaging for yourself and for other people. So it's not necessarily about making work funny. It's about making work more fun.
And you and I had a chance to talk about this. As an educator, I discovered in the classroom the same thing holds true. If I can make you laugh, it helps to relax you and helps you to be more receptive to understanding information. If you're all feeling all uptight and everything's too serious, it's much harder to learn the things you need to learn. And it's certainly much harder to, you know, I think a lot of people believe that taking themselves very seriously is an important part of it, and it is to a certain degree, but I've also discovered in my professional career, the ability to laugh at oneself, first of all, does a lot. It gives you a thicker skin because stuff just rolls off you much faster. But secondarily, you know, if you are willing to poke a little gentle fun at yourself, it also makes you more receptive to the fact that you may not always be right about everything, and also an opportunity to see other people from their points of view. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I tend to like to think that I'm right about everything, but recognize that that's not always the case. But yeah, humor definitely makes things more accessible. And there's over 30 benefits of humor that are backed by research, case studies, real world examples, and they fall kind of into five categories. So they, you know, humor can improve communication, can build relationships with other people, it can enhance your own problem solving, it can increase productivity, and then it can also strengthen leadership. And so there's tremendous value to using humor, and that's one of the most important things is starting to understand why you would use humor in the workplace, what's your specific reason for it. And one of the big ones is to build a better relationship with someone. I was talking with someone not too long ago, and we're talking about opportunities, because people who use humor in the workplace are given more opportunities. And it makes sense, because if you had two equally qualified candidates, and one person, you know, you got along with, they made you laugh, you reconnected over or connected over a shared love of Game of Thrones or something like that. You connected on this human level. And then the other person was as exciting as a brick wall, right? You're going to take the person that you engage with that was, you know, engaging and that you connected on a personal level. And so, of course, it makes sense that someone has a strong sense of humor is going to give more opportunities.
Right. In a sense, because people enjoy being around them, they enjoy their company. And as a result, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Absolutely.
Yeah, because the average person spends roughly 90,000 hours at work in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. It's 90,000 hours of your time at work. You might as well enjoy what you do and enjoy the people that you're around.
Well, and chances are when you're out with your friends, you behave very differently than when you in a professional position. You're going to probably be a funnier person with that group. And I think to your point, you don't want to be the clown, the class clown within your company, so to speak. But by the same token, there's a huge difference between being able to use humor and just being a buffoon.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I talk about using humor, I'm not saying, oh, if someone's like, hey, you know, the take from Office Space of, hey, we need those TPS reports. Not to like respond with a joke and then the person laughs and they're like, no, seriously, we need those TPS reports. And then you just respond with another joke. It's not about, you know, just ignoring all work and just being the funny guy. That's how you become, you know, as you say, the buffoon. But if you're someone that is getting the work done, you're working hard anyway, but you add this little bit of extra humor to it, you know, it's just going to take you, it's going to propel your career, and people are going to enjoy working with you.
Absolutely. Well, I want to kick things back over to Dr. J so we can set up for our break, and we'll come back and chat some more in just a few.
Well, Andrew, I can't help but think, too, of commercials on TV. It's the funny ones that you really enjoy. You may not really remember the product, but when you're talking about one-on-one or workplace communication, you're left with that positive enjoyment of interacting with someone. So thank you all for our listeners. There's more to come. And in the next half, Spider Graham and Andrew Tarvin will talk more about humorthatworks.com. This is Jane Karwoski, and you're listening to The Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Reach out to us. Our email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com or find us on Twitter @SocialNetShow.
Welcome back to The Social Network Show, where you are hearing from Spider Graham and humor engineer Andrew Tarvin.
So, Andrew, you know, you obviously started this quest, and I guess part of what I'd like to know a little bit more about is how's it wise? I mean, you don't wake up one morning and say, I'm going to be a humor engineer, I imagine. So there's an evolution that goes into it. Can you share a little bit about how you evolved and how the marketplace is responding to what you offer?
Sure. Yeah. So I don't have that sexy story of, you know, I was sitting in, you know, an office one day and ultimately decided, oh, I'm going to leave. And so I threw my desk over and stormed out or, you know, skipped out or whatever. It was more definitely, as you said, an evolution over time. Is I started, you know, when I was at P&G, I started to use humor myself and started to see the positive effects of it, especially as a project manager. You know, you're used to getting tons and tons of emails and going to presentations and meetings by project managers that are typically dry. And so I was using humor and finding a lot of success with it. So internally at P&G, I proclaimed myself the corporate humorist. Just called myself that. I started writing a blog about it. And I assumed that eventually someone, you know, from HR, from legal, somewhere was going to come by and say, hey, you can't just give yourself a title, especially like something like humor in a more conservative company like P&G. And no one ever stopped me. Instead, people started referring to me as the corporate humorist. So I started internally there and then started my website part-time, humorthatworks.com, in 2009, and just kind of explored it, was blogging about it. People were asking questions about it. I started to do various events, realized that I fell in love with the speaking and the training, because the speaking part is kind of like doing stand-up comedy, but you get to tell people what to do, which I like as an engineer. And so then I left in 2012 because I was ready to focus on it full time. And as a project manager, I definitely gave myself the different criteria that I wanted to meet in terms of X number of dollars made from the business and number of engagements that I had done and a website of this and all that kind of stuff, and had given myself metrics, something that I still follow very much today of, you know, shooting for these quantified numbers of success. One of the things that you and I had talked about is one of my goals is to speak in all 50 states and on all 7 continents.
Yeah, I'm wondering how is there a good venue in Antarctica for you?
There's a number. I've been doing a lot of research lately because I'm at 45 states right now. I will get 3 more within the next month and a half or so. So I'll have all contiguous 48 states. And then so I've started to look at the continents as well. And there are a number of research stations on Antarctica from different countries. So I'm starting to figure out which ones I might be able to go to offer some training or do some corporate entertainment or something like that. So at a minimum, even if that doesn't work out, I'm fully fine going there and speaking in front of a bunch of penguins.
Just bring some fish with you.
Exactly.
So the business, you know, obviously we're able to get some exposure. Mm-hmm. How is this changing? I mean, how is it changing? And in a lot of ways, I think what you really have is a mission in that going out and talking to different corporations and helping them to understand how they can use humor as a better way, not only to sell products, but also to communicate internally. What's the response been like?
It's been great. It's certainly something that's been growing. And the TEDx talk, I did a TEDx talk at Ohio State last year. And that's been helpful just because it's a platform that people are aware of, they're familiar with. It gives me also a 10-minute or 11-minute video that is a short synopsis of what it is that I do. And that's been helpful in kind of springboarding. Because like you said, it is very much a mission. In some ways, I think it's kind of sad that I have a job. You know, the fact that people pay me to come in and tell them to enjoy their work, it seems almost a little bit silly. But at the same time, people need it. Right? Because people are still used to this idea of work is a place that we go to and we do it, even if we don't like it, we do it so that we can have fun on the weekends and we can make money to raise our family or go on vacations or whatever. And my mission is to teach people that, yeah, you're going to do those things, but you have to do the work anyway. You might as well find ways to make it more enjoyable. And oh, by doing that, you're also going to do that job better. So not only is it going to help you as an individual because you'll get more opportunities. In one study, they found people who used more humor were paid more. You know, you're going to have a lot more fun. And then for the company, it's going to help as well because you're going to reduce turnover. You're going to increase productivity. You'll reduce healthcare costs, reduce stress, et cetera. So there's a lot of benefits that go into the whole thing. But it is very much a mission to get out there and talk to people and share it with them because sometimes that's what people need, right? No one in their company is going to say, hey, use more humor. And so I'm that person that can come out and give that message.
But what an interesting concept of you know, you talk about the ROI for something like this, and it seems a little nebulous. But when you can say, by the way, happier people are people who are going to stay in their jobs long. It's going to cost you less in turnover, which is expensive. It's going to cost you less in absenteeism, which is expensive, et cetera. And it's really interesting when you think about it that way. It's like, you know, like you said, a happy workplace is a place where people want to go to. They want to get up in the morning and go be with their friends and do something interesting together, as opposed to feeling like a wage slave who's trading hours of their life in exchange for a paycheck.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at some of the numbers and the studies out there, there's a study done in Australia of over 1,000 people, and they found that 81% of those employees would take less money if their workplace was more fun, right? So they would actually take less money because they actually enjoyed what it is that they did. And that's not to say, okay, cut everyone's salary and just, you know, add bouncy castles to the office.
Well, but the bouncy castles is a nice push. You know,
right,
that.
Yeah.
Go for that if you can. And slides. We like slides.
Right, exactly. So you have things like that. You also have, like you said, of turnover, you know, 33% of people leave their company because of their manager. They might like the company, they might like the work, but if they don't like their manager, 33%, that's the reason why, you know, a third of people leave the organization. But then you look at studies and they found that employees who rate their manager's sense of humor as above average are less likely to look for a job within the next year than employees who don't, right? So that's a very direct correlation between a manager using humor and actually helping to improve retention numbers, which then dramatically decreases the cost, which is ranges from 20 to 150% of a person's salary to replace that employee. So it's not then this nice to have, you know, it's the numeric value of it as well.
Well, and I say this only half jokingly. It makes me think that if you were looking for a job in management, you should probably have some sort of line item that says, I'm a funny guy that people like to be around, you know, something that kind of promotes that message that it's important for you to make sure that you, the people who work under you, are going to be cared for and comfortable, et cetera.
Absolutely. And one of the things, I was working with the gentleman in career transition, and I mentioned that he had a great sense of humor. So I said, put that on your resume. And he's like, ah, well, what if a company doesn't hire me because I have sense of humor on my resume?
You don't want to work there.
Exactly. It's like, great.
A big part of it.
You've just weeded out a company that you would not want to work for. Right. So, yeah, absolutely. Add it to the resume.
That's fantastic. So what are the next steps for you? I mean, apart from getting to the – and what are the five missing states, if I might ask?
All right. So the five missing states, they are Alaska, Hawaii, Missouri, Georgia, and Michigan. I'm doing an event in 2 weeks in Georgia, and then I'm going to head to Michigan for an event, and then I'll probably go down to Missouri right now. It's tentative, but I'm hoping to hit off Missouri. So – within the next couple of months, it should be the contiguous 48 that I have checked off. And then I'll have to figure out Alaska and Hawaii after that.
So are you just turning business down if they're from places like Massachusetts? You know, no, we've already done that. We don't want to come
boring,
back.
Been there.
I have to go to Michigan.
No, absolutely. I'm still doing work there. I'm just not spending as much time. Because, you know, one of my goals and one of my travel rules is one-stop minimum. Every time I travel, I got tired of doing those. You know, I did so many trips where I'd fly in, go to a hotel, go to the event the next day, and immediately go to the airport. So now I have a one-stop minimum where in every state that I go to, every location that I go to, I need to go out and experience something, whether it's a new restaurant or go to a park or something like that, because, you know, I want to apply the principles to my own work as well.
Well, I think that's a fantastic philosophy. And I think, you know, once again, finding happiness. I was just going to mention, I ran across a statistic recently, and I can't necessarily do anything with it, but it was with a healthcare worker whose job was to deal with, unfortunately, dying patients, and was talking about the biggest regrets they had in their lives. And one of the ones was, and I found this very, very telling, that they'd never given themselves permission to be happy. Which is probably more indicative of some of the restrictions within our culture or society. But there's something to be said in a crossover of how do you get people to be okay with the idea that happiness is a good thing and that humor is part of that.
Yeah, well, and that's part of the thing. You know, people go into sometimes think if I'm laughing at work, I'm not working hard enough, or that's what people are going to think about me. And the reality is, if you really care enough about the work that you do and your long-term success and happiness, humor is an integral part of that, right? We have something that I refer to, or actually it comes from the Human Performance Institute, which is called strategic disengagement. Basically, the idea of strategically taking a break from your work so that you prevent burnout, you reduce stress, and you come back to what you're doing stronger and more effective. And humor is incredibly valuable when it comes to strategically disengaging. And I think it is partly a perception thing of, yeah, you can enjoy your work and actually still be doing incredibly impactful, incredibly powerful things.
Well, this has been incredibly fascinating, and as before, enjoying talking with you on this topic very much. Can you share with our listeners ways they can get in touch with you if they want to know a little bit more about Humor That Works or get in touch with you directly?
Sure, yeah. And one other quick thing I want to mention, because we've skirted around it a little bit with the idea of humor and talking about its fun. I think one of the things that's important to recognize about humor is the definition itself. Because humor is defined as a comic, absurd, or incongruous quality causing amusement. And so, again, when people think of humor in the workplace, they think of making things funny. But it's all in the definition itself. It's something that's a little bit different, something that is maybe a little bit silly. You know, it's smiling when you go into the workplace, but it's all about causing amusement. So, again, maybe laughter isn't necessarily the response that you receive, but a smile is also just as good. And so I think that's important for people to kind of take away. And if they want to explore more or talk more about what that means, they can reach out to me. I'm available at Humor That Works on Twitter. HumorThatWorks.com is my website, or directly via email, Andrew@HumorThatWorks.com.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today, especially on such short notice. Dr. J, your thoughts?
Well, it's been an honor to have you both with us. Enjoyed that very much, Andrew. Thanks a lot. And Spider, as always, it's been a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you, Dr. J.
So thank you, our listeners. You are our most important guest, and we bring you leaders in business, cyber citizenship, the ethical, legal, and social implications of our networked connected world. Please shop for our app in Google Play or the iTunes App Store. It's simply The Social Network Show, and share it with others. Please have fun and be safe online and off until you listen again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the worldwide show dedicated to social media networking and understanding the connected, networked world we live in. Listen to our archive shows on thesocialnetworkshow.com and follow us on Twitter at Social Net Show. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia Incorporated. The views and opinions expressed are those of our host and guest and may not be the views and opinions of Social Network Intermedia.